I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. The Arab Spring, it was good for some countries where citizens rose up. Tunisia came through the protests better off. Libya cast off a dictator. But Syria's version of the Arab Spring, clearly a disaster. So it's notable when you see fighters from Libya going to Syria. Now, there have been lots of foreign fighters in the war in Syria on both sides for some time, but the story we're going to tell you now is about one young fighter from Libya who went to Syria and his older brother, Mohammed, who desperately wants him back home. Our reporter, Marine Olivezi, starts her story on a stretch of coast in Libya.
This is a spot dear to Mohammed's heart, a Roman amphitheater with the Mediterranean sparkling behind it. It's been his hideout during good times and bad.
It's a beautiful place, huh?
When I was a kid, my father was bringing us here. I found myself have problems or something. I came here just to relax, look at the sea and thinking.
Mohammed spent hours here at the end of the Libyan Revolution, thinking about the exhilaration and death that defined the 9 months of the uprising. But these days, it's not the ghost of the Libyan war that haunt him. I first met Mohammed in January, in a much less grandiose sight. It was his fourth week in the dusty town of Kilis, at the Turkish-Syrian border. He was on a mission to find his 15-year-old brother, Ayub, who had slipped out of Libya and gone to fight in Syria, and to bring him home.
Every night I didn't sleep, I was just trying to call, but no answer. Like this, that means how it works.
During the day, Mohammed would approach people who would cross the border, asking for tips on where his brother might be. At night, he would tirelessly dial the same 3 phone numbers he had for his brother and other contacts. Nothing worked, but Mohammed refused to lose hope.
I promised myself that I want to go back with him. I don't want to go back alone. Even if you take here, I will take here.
Mohammed says he feels guilty. During the Libyan uprising, he was a celebrated fighter. In Sirte, he was part of the small group of rebels who caught and killed Gaddafi's son, Mutasim. He's proud of that, but also believes that his brother, who was an impressionable 12-year-old at the time, went to Syria to be a hero, like him.
He said to me after our revolution, all the time, he said to me, I want to be like you, I want to do the same way that you done. And I asked him, it will never can be because there is no revolution for you. You have to live now. I do that for you. You have to live. You have to look for your future.
Ayub's future looked good. His mother says the teenager was well at school, respected his elders, and lived a comfortable life. She began to get worried when Ayub started bringing up Syria time and again.
It all started because of the media. He was watching the satellite channels, and they would bring up all these bad pictures. He would ask me about it and mention the names of cities in Syria. He also started chatting on the internet with people his age in Syria, and I think they planted the idea in his head to go there.
On December 25th, Ayub was supposed to be at school, but instead he headed off to Istanbul with a school friend. Mohammed followed him to Turkey the next day, but it was too late. At the border, he met a smuggler who confirmed his worst fear. Ayub was already inside Syria. And he wasn't just with any rebel group, but with the most radical bunch, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. It's a brigade made up mostly of foreign jihadists and affiliated with Al-Qaeda. Mohammed says he would have been suicidal to chase his brother into Syria. So he used middlemen, Syrians with connections who might help. Days and weeks passed, and things got grimmer. One day, Ayub posted on Facebook 2 pictures of himself in Aleppo. He's carrying a Kalashnikov and dressed in a traditional Arabic outfit instead of his usual jeans and T-shirt. But for Mohammed, the most disturbing part of it is Ayub's hand sign.
Look at.
During the revolution, Libyan fighters always raised 2 fingers, a V for victory. On this picture, though, Ayub points his 4th finger up to the sky.
Because we do that. 2 fingers win, and 1 finger dying. And 1 finger just 1 God and dying for the God.
When Ayub finally called his mother, she asked him to come back. He said he wouldn't. It's better for me to be in Syria, he told her. I won't go to heaven if I spend time with you, but if I stay in Syria, I will. The last straw came after about a month in Turkey, when Ayub posted an angry Facebook message calling Mohammed a kafir, or infidel. Mohammed says he was ready to fight for his brother, but not to fight against him. So he decided to leave Turkey. I failed, he told me then. We lost him. Mohammed says the jihadist group in Syria brainwashed his brother. But he says Libya has failed young people like Ayub as well.
We started a revolution and we didn't finish it. Families now, they are screaming about the revolution. It's our mistake, unfortunately.
Libyan teenagers now look at all the armed militias around and think guns and fighting are the answer. Now back in Libya, Mohammed wants to make sure his youngest brother, Abdelhamid, who's 9, doesn't fall into the same trap. Mohammed spends more time at home these days and ponders whether to move the family out of Libya. As for Ayub, Mohammed thinks getting him back alive from Syria would be nothing short of a miracle. For The World, I'm Marine Olivezi, Homs, Libya.
As you heard in Marine's story, the attraction of fighting holy war in a foreign country can be irresistible for some people. There's danger and adventure mixed with a sense of religious duty. Here's another example of someone whose story starts a few years ago. This man, who spoke anonymously with the BBC, is a Muslim who lived a fairly comfortable life in Saudi Arabia until the Balkan Wars in Europe compelled him to act.
At that time, it was the Bosnian conflict raging, and I felt it was a responsibility on anyone with a conscience, basically, to do something. But the international community at that time did not do enough, and so it was one of those crazy moments in one's life where you take a decision and then you act upon it. And so I went to join the jihad there. At later time, when I went to Afghanistan and joined the training camps there, it was then that I was more or less attracted to the ideology of Al-Qaeda, and then I joined them.
The man says at one point, motivated by thoughts of martyrdom and anger toward the West, he became a preacher and a recruiter for radical Islam, first in places where Muslims gathered and later online. He says his was a culture of death.
You know, one of the ironies is that we never feared death, but we feared imprisonment because, you know, imprisonment is something that confines you physically and spiritually in a place, while martyrdom is regarded as something that will free your spirit.
He says he worked alongside Osama bin Laden, whom he admired at the time. But after 12 years in 4 different war zones, he admits he feels partially responsible for the deaths he and others he recruited caused. But he's now living in the UK and offering his advice to the British government on how to dissuade more British Muslims from joining the jihadist movement in places like Syria. He says officials need to be more proactive.
They must spell out clearly that while they respect and admire the motives of those who want to go there because they want to help others, they do not trust the motives of those who will host them there. This journey could begin with a noble motive and ends with a tragedy. They might come back changed people and also with sinister motives.
The man who did not want to be named is a former member of Al-Qaeda. He spoke recently to the BBC.